Very happy to have you here this holiday weekend. And as we get into the sermon time here, just a couple of items of note. I think first of which, please be in prayer for the Deal and Dunn clan. They lost Marzell Friday night. Mom, grandma, sister, all the way down to great-great-grandma, right? We got that figured out. Leaving a big, huge hole in their hearts. So lift this family up in your prayers as they're going to be having services this week. Wednesday, 10 o'clock, is that right, Roy? Right here. At Frakers? Okay. Number two, it's Memorial Day weekend, so thanks to all of you who've served our country. Thanks to all of those who have served or are serving our community as firefighters, police officers, first responders. We appreciate all that you have done and all that you do. Third thing, if you have the board nomination slips, the elders would like those back in today. And I think the last thing I would say is next week, Sunday night, June 3rd, Teresa and I are having picnic at the pastor's. So come to our house between 6 and 8 o'clock, and we'll have a burger, a dog for you. Love to chat with you for a bit. Just we want to open our home to you to come by. So just put that on your calendar for next Sunday night. Now, every day, all of us engage in a dangerous, life-threatening activity. We strap ourselves into 3,500-pound machines that scream down thin ribbons of asphalt at deadly speed. And yet we do all of this with complete comfort and confidence. We will casually eat lunch, listen to music, talk to passengers, even chat on our phones, all the while hurling down these asphalt tendrils of death. And we do this while passing within just a couple of other feet of machines traveling at similar breakneck speed. Why do we do this? Are we insane, Ralph? You do this for a living. Are we completely crazy? Well, no. Because if you look down on the pavement, somebody has painted white and yellow lines. And those lines are supposedly there to tell you where you can safely go and where the other machines can safely go. And as long as you stay in your lines and everybody else stays in their lines, hopefully you can get to where you're going without issue. But what would happen if there were no lines? Or imagine this. Everybody could paint their own lines wherever they wanted to. I remember one time I was a child. I was riding with my dad late at night. And we're sitting there driving down the road, and all of a sudden he swerves into the wrong lane. And I freak out. Dad, what are you doing? You're going to get us killed. And my dad starts into this rant. He's just yanking my chain, but I'm a little kid. But he's like, I'm a taxpayer. And he says, I pay taxes for this side of the road. And he swerves back to the other side, and I pay taxes for this side of the road. So if I want to drive down this side of the road, I'll drive down this side of the road. And if I want to drive down this side of the road, I'll drive down this side of the road. Now, thank God I survived that traumatic experience. But what if every person could just paint their lines wherever they wanted to go? My own girls give me a hard time because when I'm going around the corners, I like to pretend I'm a NASCAR driver and I like to, you know, cut the corner a little bit. You know, you want to make that turn just as smooth as possible. It hasn't gotten me into trouble yet. But in the same way, God has painted lines in life. There are certain moral principles, standards of right and wrong. Matters of truth that mark out for us where you can safely go, where you can safely live in life. And as long as you stay within those lines that God has marked out, and as long as those around you stay within those lines, everything will be fine. And if you think about it, most of the troubles we have, most of the trouble we get into happens when we or someone near us decides to ignore those lines and go wherever they want. Now, over the last several weeks, we've been in the book of Judges, and I want to apologize for not having the PowerPoint. I put that together last night, but I forgot to save it to my Dropbox, so I didn't have it on the computer here to put over here today. So that's my fault. If you're following along and trying to fill out the things in your bulletin, you're just going to have to pay extra close attention this morning. But we've been in the book of Judges. And as we've gone through the book of Judges, we have seen what happens to individuals, to families, to tribes, and even entire nations when they ignore the lines. Four times in Judges' closing chapter, we are told, in those days, Israel had no king. And it doesn't mean they just didn't have an earthly king, but it means that they had rejected God as their divine king. There was no ultimate authority. There was nobody who painted any lines that the people respected. And so we are told in Judges 17:6, so the people did whatever seemed right in their own line, own eyes. Everyone was painting their own lines. Now, we're going to skip over Samson today. Today is Family Sunday, and the kids are in here with us. And frankly, Samson gets into some non-family friendly territory. So we will save him for next week. But Judges closes with two troubling and tragic stories, and we'll be looking at the first of these. It's within this story that we are told four times Israel had no king. And this story, I believe, mirrors what's going on in our own culture, but I think it's also a window into what's going on in our own lives when we choose to ignore God's line. So turn in your Bibles to Judges 17 and 18. Our story begins with a man by the name of Micah from the tribe of Ephraim. Micah steals a large amount of silver from his mother. I read one scholar who said it was several million dollars worth of silver. Lady had a lot of jewelry, Terry. That's all I could say. And as you might imagine, Micah's mom isn't too happy about this. And so she pronounces a curse on whomever stole the silver. And she doesn't know who took it, but God curse whoever did. Well, Micah, because of his pagan culture, because he doesn't have a solid understanding of God, believes this curse. And he is afraid of this curse. And so he returns the silver. Now, Micah's mama is so happy that she dedicates the silver to the Lord. Now that sounds good, doesn't it? Until we read that she has some of the silver made into idols. Micah then takes these idols and he sets up a family worship shrine inside of their home. Now this was a typical pagan practice. Every pagan home would have their own little area in the home where they would have their family idols set up and they could go and worship their false gods right within the comfortable confines of their own home. Micah even has some priestly garments made. He ordains his own son as a priest. It is his own personally customized religion. And it's not surprising then that we read in verse 6, in those days, Israel had no king, so the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. Micah was painting his own lines. He didn't care where God had painted them. Not long after this, a homeless Levite from Bethlehem arrives in town. Now, if you remember your Old Testament history, the tribe of Levi was the religious tribe. This was the priestly tribe. All of the priests come from the Levites. And so Micah saw in this Levite an opportunity to upgrade his own personalized religion. Micahism 2.0. He offers the Levite room and board and an annual stipend to be the family priest. Micah's do-it-yourself religion is now complete. And again we read, in those days, Israel had no king. They're painting their own lines. All goes well until 5 scouts from the tribe of Dan arrive. I'll give you a little bit of background here. When Israel went into the promised land, God assigned every tribe a portion of the land. And each tribe was to go to that portion of land, take out whomever was there, and claim that territory as their own. Well, Dan got to their area and looked at it and said, well, they're big and scary. We don't want that area. And they refused to obey God. And they went out looking for an easier place to live. Something that was a little more comfortable. Something that would have been more convenient. And so that's what these 5 guys are looking for. New territory that they could call their own. And they seek guidance from Micah's priest. And the priest tells them that they could successfully take the peaceful city of Laish. Well, with this good news, a whole army of the Danites arrive. And since the idols gave them the news that they wanted, they stole Micah's idols. The priest is like, hey, you can't take those. Those aren't yours. And they said, what if we offer you more money? Okay, sounds good. So the Micah's priest goes off with the Danites and the stolen idols. And then they proceed to brutally slaughter the innocent city of Laish. And they took it as their own and they renamed it Dan. And again we read, in those days Israel had no king. They were a people without lines. Now there's a lot of lessons you could draw from these 2 chapters. But I want to draw your attention to 3. 3 results of living outside of God's lines. And the first is this. The growth of sin. The cancerous growth of sin. You see, sin always starts out as something small. Something manageable. Something that you can control. It's like getting your own pet lion as a cub. Is that what they are, cubs? Lion cubs? Is that the right term? It's cute. It's cuddly. It's fun. It's just like a kitten. But it never stays that way. It grows. It changes. It becomes fierce. It becomes uncontrollable. And it always comes back to bite you. Look where this story begins. It starts with one man stealing silver from his mom. It ends with an entire nation consumed in idolatry. It begins between one man and his mother, and soon it affects the entire family as the whole family is worshiping at this shrine. It then infects the whole community. Look what happens in 18, verse 22, after the Danites steal Micah's idols. Look who goes after them. When the people from the tribe of Dan were quite a distance from Micah's home, Micah and some of his neighbors came chasing after them. It isn't just Micah. It isn't just Micah's family. Now he's got the whole community in on this. They've all got skin in this game. So the sin spreads from Micah to his family, to his whole community. And from there, it infects the whole tribe of Dan. And if you follow the history of Dan throughout the Old Testament, what you will learn is that Dan, first of all, is never able to escape from the snare of idolatry. This tribe becomes completely consumed in idol worship. Not only that, but the city of Dan becomes like a capital of idol worship. It becomes the place where everybody in northern Israel goes to worship false gods. And they have a huge shrine set up there. They have a huge altar. And I really wish I had gotten my PowerPoint here today, because I had this great picture of Teresa. A few years ago, we were in Israel and we visited the city of Dan. And one of the things that the archaeologists have found is they have found where the pagan shrine was in Dan. And they have found the foundations of the altar that was there. And it was huge. Imagine something about twice my height and probably as big a square as this whole stage is here. And there's even steps going up the side of it. And this is where the priest would go to offer sacrifices to all these idols, including human sacrifices. And when God finally has enough and he sends in the Assyrians to wipe out Israel, the tribe of Dan is the first to go. I would not be surprised if that spot where Teresa and I were several years ago is the very spot where Micah's idols were first set up when they took the city of Laish and renamed it Dan. Sin is no different today. It starts small and it grows and it spreads. Jesus tells us in the Sermon on the Mount that murder begins with anger, that adultery begins with lust. We begin by straying over God's lines just a little bit. But before you know it, it's not just a little bit. We're plunging headlong over the cliff. No person is bigger than his or her sin. We fool ourselves into thinking that it's personal. We fool ourselves into thinking it's private. But sin never stays in the closet. It never stays swept under the rug. You can't tame it. You can't manage it. Sin consumes you, and it begins to consume all of those around you. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8 says, "Do not be misled. Remember, you can't ignore God and get away with it. You will always reap what you sow. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful desires will harvest the consequence of decay and death." And in Numbers chapter 32, verse 23, it says this: "You may be sure your sin will find you out." Your sin will find you out. We had some friends in our last church. Another couple about our age. We'd gone out to eat with them and done some things with them. He and I were shooting buddies. We'd go to the range and do some target practice together. And I knew they had some marriage problems. They had both talked to me about it at different times. What I didn't know is that at some point in these troubles, he began this sort of flirtatious, emotional affair with a lady at work. And they were texting and sexting with one another. Well, one night, he was texting her. And in the worst case of fat thumb syndrome, sends a completely inappropriate picture, not to the other woman, but his 12-year-old daughter. Your sin will find you out. When we lived in Illinois, there was a story on the news about a bank robbery. Guy successfully robbed a bank, got away with all the money. The only problem is, The note that he gave the teller was on the back of his deposit slip. Had his name and address and account number. Your sin will find you out. Maybe my favorite example of this is a story from the UK newspaper, The Mirror. It tells about a 20-year-old girl. She drops out of college, but she doesn't want her parents to know because she knows that they will be mad at her. But she's got to make ends meet. And so she starts working for an escort service. Meanwhile, a married father of three is having some marriage troubles. He decides to rent a hotel room and hire a prostitute. When he answers the door, he is shocked to see his daughter. And the 20-year-old girl is shocked to see her father. He collapses to the floor. She flees the hotel in tears. Be sure of this, your sin will find you out. And it doesn't just mean that your secret sin will become public. But it's this idea of your sin will always catch up to you. You can't outrun it. You can't stay ahead of it. Try as hard as you might. It found out Micah. And isn't it ironic that the man who stole silver from his mom had that same silver stolen from him? Oh, boo-hoo. Don't buy the lie that you are the exception, that you can get away with it. Your sin will always find you out. And when you live outside of God's lines, the sin will grow, it will spread in your life. And you may succeed in getting away with it for a while. And a few may even succeed in getting away with it throughout their earthly lives. But I'll guarantee you this, it will catch up to them in eternity. Although it usually finds us out much sooner than that. And that's a good thing. Because it gives us an opportunity to repent, to turn our lives over to Christ. It gives us a chance to discover the grace of God and experience His mercy in our lives. So first is the growth of sin. The second result of living outside of God's lines is an increase in false religion or false worship. Whenever man rejects God, he makes his own. It has been wisely said that God created man in his own image, then man returned the favor. And this is what was happening in Micah's day. As they began to travel outside of God's lines and disobeying God's standards, they began to make up their own. They substituted their own religious practices. Micah made his own designer religion. He chose all the parts he wanted. He took a little bit of the old covenant of Moses. He mixed it with some pagan idol worship, added a few ingredients of his own, mixed it all up, and baked it at 375 for 45 minutes. He made his own idols. He designed his own priestly garments. He ordained his own priests. It was a user-friendly religion customized to his own personal desires. Is that not what we are doing today? And thanks to modern technology, it's easy. There's a website called Belief-O-Matic. And by answering a series of questions, you can choose your own religion. It says so much about our culture. And even though we are becoming increasingly non-Christian, it doesn't mean that we're becoming less religious. In fact, America may be more religious now than we ever have been. As people continue to leave traditional Christian churches, participation in pagan religions and Eastern religions is booming. Do you know what the fastest growing religion in the United States is? And I'll give you a hint, it's not Islam. Islam is the fastest growing major religion. Fastest growing religion in the United States is, what did you say, Terry? No? Wicca. Form of witchcraft. University chapels are now appointing pagan chaplains. I was reading an interview with a well-known pagan leader, a Wicca leader, and she feared that attendance in pagan rituals was growing far too rapidly and they wouldn't be able to control it. You see, our nation's become this spiritual smorgasbord, a religious buffet where beliefs and convictions of every flavor are put alongside of one another, and we can just pick and choose whatever ones we want. 83% of Americans still say they believe in God, but the view of God they have is completely foreign to the Bible. 80% of Americans believe that there are multiple religions that lead to eternal life, and that includes 70% of those who profess to be Christians. Even though Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Brother, it's a la carte. And you're not limited to formal menu options. You can take a little from here and a touch of that and mix it with a dab of this. Michelle often attends a Lutheran church with her friend, but she regularly prays to birds. She believes birds are embodied spirits and can respond to her prayers. She also believes she can communicate with animals. And although Brett was raised in a strong Southern Baptist family and still maintains ties to his Baptist church, he feels a much stronger relationship with Mother Earth. He takes time every Saturday to commune with nature, and he says that is his time of worship. Stephanie reads her Bible every day, along with her horoscope. She scans each, looking for important signs to make her daily decisions. She also regularly consults a psychic. Her advice is crucial to her relationships and finances. Stephanie practices yoga meditation every day in order to get in touch with the God within. And he believes his regular meditations have helped him achieve a higher state of consciousness. Brandy's a part of the high school youth group at the church down the street. However, she's also an ardent vegan and animal rights activist, as she believes that many animals are reincarnated human spirits. Those are actually real examples that I found in an article that talked about how people are mixing traditional Christianity with these other belief systems. Everybody does what is right in their own eyes. And that's what happens when we live outside of the lines. We begin to invent false religions. It's not a surprise then that a culture that lives outside of those lines, we find ourselves awash in double standards. You see, the third result of living outside of God's lines is we begin to accept spiritual hypocrisy. We begin to believe in things that are contradictory. You see, painting my own lines is great until someone else's lines get in my way. All of a sudden, what I think is all right for me is not so nifty for you. It's okay if I do it, but I don't like it if you do it. For example, I may feel perfectly justified in twisting the truth and fudging the facts as long as it gets me what I want. But when you start playing loose with the truth and I get the short end of the stick, that's a different story. If I go to the store and the clerk gives me too much change, well, finders keepers, right? But if I find out she charged me $5 too much, then I'm going back to get what's rightfully mine. And that's what was going on in Micah's world. He had no problem stealing the silver from his mother, did he? But what was his reaction when somebody stole that silver from him? He rounds up a posse of his neighbors and he goes chasing after them and he whines, "You've taken away all my gods and my priests and I have nothing left." Painting his own lines was great until somebody else painted right across his. And then he got mad. And then there's Micah's priest. The priest objected when the Danites stole Micah's idols, but when they offered him more money, well, he's perfectly cool with that. When you live outside the lines, you lose your sense of direction. Your standards for right and wrong and your principles of truth begin to look like an M.C. Escher picture or a Salvador Dali painting. Up is down, is out, is over, is under, is sideways, is down. Everything is twisted and warped, and nothing is what it seems. Consider the following. There is a growing movement in academic circles to normalize pedophilia. The Supreme Court has ruled that virtual child pornography is constitutionally protected free speech. And we even have a sitting Supreme Court justice who once argued in a paper for the ACLU that the legal age of consent should be lowered to 12 years old. Destroying a bald eagle egg will get you a prison sentence and a heavy fine, but it's perfectly fine to rip an unborn human baby limb from limb. We are developing amazing medical procedures that allow premature babies to live outside of the womb, weighing as little as 1.75 pounds. At the same time, we have perfected procedures that suck the brains out of perfectly healthy, full-term, conscious human babies. You can put a cross in a jar of urine, and it's constitutionally protected free speech. It is called art. It is publicly funded. But don't you dare bring a Bible to school. It's the culture in which we live, a culture of double standards, of spiritual hypocrisy, and we're not immune. Do we tell our kids to tell the truth? But then they catch us telling little white lies that serve our own interests? Do we tell our kids to stop yelling at each other? But then they hear mom and dad screaming at one another. Do we tell them not to whine and complain while negative words flow from our lips? Do we profess our faith to our coworkers while we are a constant source of hostility and negativity? Do we act one way at church, one way at youth group, but we're somebody completely different at school? Even we as Christians have ignored God's lines and we have painted our own. And our lives are filled with double standards. The book of Judges is a story of sadness and tragedy. It's a story of a people who had all of the promise and potential that God could give. But they never realized that potential. They missed the promise because they lived outside of the lines. They squandered their opportunity. And I think, sadly, this could become the story of the American church. So much promise, so much potential. But we've become complacent. We've been corrupted by the values of the world around us. And we've ignored the call of God. If I go out on the road and I paint my own lines, who cares where MDOT put them? Because instead of the Missouri Department of Transportation, it is now the Dan Department of Transportation. And I paint my own lines, and you paint your own lines, and you all paint your own lines, and you paint yours, and you guys paint yours. What are we going to have? Chaos, confusion, and crashes. Lots of them. Look at what's going on in our world. Look at the conflict and violence. Look what's happening in our homes and our families. Look at our schools and our universities. Look at the complete loss of trust that most Americans have in the government. Look at the school shootings. Look at the political hostility. Look at the overcrowded prisons and our clogged courts. Look at our corporate scandals. It's the chaos, confusion, and crashes that happen from living outside of the lines. As we draw to a close this morning, we need to examine ourselves to see how much we've fallen into the same trap that Micah has fallen into. We've bought into the lies of our culture. We have begun doing what seems right in our own eyes. and we have ignored the lines that God has painted. Maybe today needs to be a day of repentance. Maybe today is a day where we get our lives back inside the lines that God has painted, because those lines aren't there to hurt you. They're not there to hinder you. They're not there to take away your freedom or to keep you from getting to where you want to go. In fact, those lines give you freedom. Staying in those lines will ensure that you get to where you want to go. Whether it's the lines out there on the highway or the lines that God has painted in life, they're there to keep you safe. And they're there to get you to where you want to go. But we've got to stay in those lines. Would you please be standing? We're going to sing a song of invitation and commitment. And whether or not you need to repent today or you want to turn your life over to Jesus for the first time, I'm going to be through these doors. If you have a decision you want to make, we're going to have some people in the back who are available to pray with you. We also have a prayer bench if you just need to spend some time between you and God as we sing this song. Let us sing.